Hey guys, it's James Chester here. You're listening to the Gather Round the Lamp podcast by underagaslitlamp.com.
Gather Round the Lamp, an Aston Villa podcast.
And instead it goes to Bailey!
Hello villains, and gather round for this week's episode of Gather Round the Lamp, an Aston Villa podcast by underagaslitlamp.com. It hasn't taken long for the Villa bubble to burst, as a humiliating defeat and two major injuries have delivered an early season body blow to Emery's team. So we'll be trying to work out what the heck went wrong and how the team moved forwards. I'm your host Andy, and first of all joining me this week, it's Dan.
Hi Andy, hi listener. Can we go back to last week before the football had started? I preferred life then, it was much better.
Yeah, it was. It's always, we were just saying, the football had to come along and ruin everything, didn't it, this week? But there we go. And also joining myself and Dan, James, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Andy. Thanks for having me. Hi, Dan. Hello, listener. They say a week is a long time in football, and boy, oh boy, yeah, it certainly feels like that this week, doesn't it?
Certainly does. It's a bit depressing, really. I don't know where to start, but I think we'll take things in chronological order. And we'll start with a bit of news we've kind of missed out on last week. On last week's show, we were talking about the potential impact that Emi Buendia might have this season after quite an impressive pre-season. But unfortunately, news came through, I think last Wednesday or Thursday, that Emi Buendia had suffered a knee ligament injury, quite a serious long-term injury in training, which will keep him out for a number of months. Obviously, it's a significant injury that he's got there. He probably would have started, to be honest, at Newcastle, and he would have certainly been, as we said, an important member of the squad, if not the team, throughout the season and the European campaign. So it's disappointing, and it's always such a shame for players, to get these big injuries. It can be really, really hard work. You listen to any player who's been through it. I was listening to Alan Shearer and so on earlier on, and that they just say how awful it can be coming back from an injury. I mean, obviously, he is a player that kind of divides people a little bit, although he's extremely popular with the fans, high energy player, well respected player. Dan, I think he would have been an important figure in the squad, as we say. How significant is this injury for Villa?
I think it's a big one. I mean, we're going to be talking a lot about injuries today. Kind of sorry about that, listener. There's a few injuries going round. They seem to be catching. But Buendia had had such a good pre-season, which is what I think makes this one feel even crueler. He just started to show his best form. He was electric in the build-up. And he looked set to have a big year for Villa. And then for it to be so cruelly snapped away from him on the eve of the season, it's just unfair. And I know he's got... The fan base is divided probably on Emi Buendia. And I think this podcast is pretty divided on Emi Buendia. But for Unai Emery, he's one of his most important men. I think he's the only player that has played in every game and every competition under Unai Emery, which kind of speaks volumes about how he values him. And it's because it's probably not even his attacking output, it's his defensive output. And I think we probably saw against Newcastle how much we missed that.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that, Dan. I think for me, probably my favourite. It seems odd saying this about an attacking player, but I think my favourite aspect of Brent here is his energy levels and that pressing. I think he's one of the best pressers we've got on the ball in the side. And as you say, he was the only player to, I think, appeared in every game last season under Emery. That energy he brings to the team is obviously a quality that Emery really sort of rates. And yeah, he'd looked really, really, really sharp in pre-season. Some of the goals and assists he was involved with, particularly with Watkins, looked like those two are really forming a real sort of solid understanding of each other. And yeah, I was certainly very excited to see sort of what the season was going to hold, really. I thought it was going to be a really big season for him to sort of really push on and sort of show everybody what he's about.
Yeah, this is it. I mean, you know, whatever... For me, whatever the arguments or the discussions about whether he should be in the team or what his strengths and weaknesses are, you know, when it comes to the human element of the guy being hurt and that sort of thing, and that the impact that it obviously has on him, you know, it's obviously awful, and we wish him, you know, a really quick recovery. Hopefully, you know, he's in his mid-20s. He's a young guy, and you know, I'm sure he'll get all the best care and treatment that he can, and he'll hopefully be back, you know, in good time. And he's obviously got his whole career ahead of him, really, hasn't he? Certainly his prime years. So you know, let's hope that's the case for him. And you know, it's like you say, both of you say, it's just gutting, isn't it, on the first, you know, the first week of the season to have that just before we've started. I suppose on the plus side of things, if there is a plus side, it's good that it's happened. From the team perspective, it's good that it's happened before the transfer window closes. So, you know, they can try and do something to minimise the impact.
It's a fair point, because I was actually about to ask you, gents, like, do you think the timing's a good thing or a bad thing? Because we've played the whole of pre-season thinking probably that Emi Buendia was going to start on the left against Newcastle, and all of a sudden you have to tear up those plans within 24 hours, and then, as we'll get onto, 24 hours later, you have to tear up the rest of your plans. We're onto a plan F or G at the moment, but the timing is what feels cruel. I mean, we know injuries can happen at any time, but on the eve of the season starting just feels typically Villa, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it was very sort of disappointing, I think, as to come through the pre-season, so much optimism. But I think, obviously, there was a lot of opportunity to catch quite a lot of the games this season. Obviously, the Sky televised the North America tour, and the club have been showing the other friendly. So I think we've all, hopefully, well, quite a lot of people will have seen a lot of that footage. And yeah, certainly Brendier was looking sharp. The team were looking sharp. I think The Athletic did a poll about a week ago, and the Villa fan base were the most optimistic in the Premier League. And yeah, as I say, a lot can change in a week, can't it? But I mean, I think back to the original question, the timing. Obviously, there's ever a good time to pick up a serious injury like that. But I suppose, yes, the club at least do have an opportunity now, perhaps two or three weeks, to hopefully maybe, if they feel see fit, obviously you would expect they would have a short list of players for each position, and hopefully sort of Monchi and his guys are looking at that list now to see if it's feasible to sort of perhaps bring anybody in and just sort of keep that strength in the squad. Because I think that was one of the causes for the optimism, wasn't it? That I think we'd got a good, strong side last year, which was really starting to click. But I think particularly with the rigours of the European campaign as well, I think most people would agree that perhaps it was the depth of the squad, if nothing else, that needed working on. And the club, given their dues, I think had done that. Sort of three fantastic signings to come in to bolster the squad, if not sort of first team starters. And yeah, it's sort of almost back to the drawing board before we've really kicked a ball in anger.
Yeah, it's very similar to last season, isn't it, with the Carlos injury very early on. And that, you know, at that point the club went and signed Jan Bednarek on loan, which they may as well have signed me, to be honest, because you know, clearly Gerrard and Emery didn't trust him one iota to want to to pick him in the first team. But, you know, it's not about getting warm bodies in. It's getting genuine options in the door, isn't it? People that are going to have or potentially could have this, a similar impact to what Emi would have had, you know. So, you know, it's tricky. I think from a timing perspective, my thinking is, although it feels cruel before the season started, he's got the whole season. And then if he can get some, if it is sort of 8-10 months, which is an awfully long time, but he might just get a bit of game time before the end of the season, and then he can have a full pre-season. I think if you do something like this in the middle of the season, January or something, you then miss pre-season as well, don't you? And then it's hard to catch up, and it's hard to... I think that was the part of the issue with Wesley as well. He didn't really... He never had that pre-season with the group, you know, which might have been helpful to him. But, I mean, that's a small thing, really. Like I say, there's never a good time for this to happen. But from Buendia's point of view, maybe now he can just focus on, you know, trying to get back, hopefully before the end of the season, and really hitting pre-season and you know, and being involved next season, all being well. But we know sometimes there's follow up to these types of injuries as well, isn't there? But you know, hopefully not. But yeah, I hope he's you know, obviously everyone here sends their best wishes to Emi, and you know, a speedy recovery and get back in the Villa shirt as soon as possible. But yeah, we might as well move on to the next disaster at Newcastle on Saturday. We were all obviously looking forward to this game. It's a huge game between two very in-form and well-fancied teams. Interesting that Leon Bailey started in the absence of Buendia. And Luca Dean played at left back, as many people kind of predicted that Pau Torres might start in that position. But he was on the bench, and of course Moussa Diaby made his debut in attack alongside Watkins. Dan, any? I mean, it seems obviously we know what we're going to talk about in a minute, but you know, it seems a bit moot, really. But any surprises for you here? And you know, how did you see this team selection?
My only surprise was it felt a little bit open. I kind of playing Luca Dean and Matty Cash at fullback against a good Newcastle side feels a little bit of a gamble, but I can kind of see what Emery was doing, and he was, you know, didn't want to throw anyone into the deep end. But I feel like maybe we need to talk about Leon Bailey. I feel like maybe's the time. Can we throw Leon Bailey on the trash heap of Villa players at the moment? I mean, I've reached a point where I feel like a cardboard cutout of Leon Bailey would offer stiffer resistance than Leon Bailey on the wing. And he's just, oh, it was painful to watch against Newcastle. Gordon just drifting past him like he wasn't there. And then for him to come off at halftime with a supposed back injury, I mean, Andy, you talked about maybe you should have been signed as a warm body last season. I'd have rather had you on right wing against Newcastle. You might have at least shown some hustle about you. It's just, I don't know. I want Leon Bailey to do well, but I have run out of patience now. So yeah, Andy, get stripped off. You're in next week, right wing.
Might have to lose.
That was my position, Andy, you were the striker, weren't you, growing up? I was right winger. It's mine. I'll have the shirt. But yeah, I think in terms of the lineup, I think for me, Bailey was perhaps the only surprise. I think given the availability, I wasn't expecting Torres to start. I think that would have been a bit of a baptism of fire, sort of starting your first game away at Newcastle in the Premier League. And I think Diaby had played well enough in pre-season. I think he was going to get the start. And Tielemans, I think, unfortunately for him, was just trying to break up a combination in Lewis and Kamara, who'd played so well together. And likewise, I think Mings and Konsa at centre-back, the four of those were always going to start, I think, given the form at the end of last season. So, yeah, I think the lineup was probably fairly predictable. But, yeah, perhaps Bailey was maybe fortunate to count himself himself amongst the starting 11. As you say, I don't think he really did an awful lot then in that first 45 minutes to justify his selection.
I'd have even liked to have seen him on the left, maybe. I don't know what you gents think, but I mean, hindsight's 20/20. But Anthony Gordon seemed like he was tearing Matty Cash a new one, and I'm kind of surprised we didn't swap McGinn over there earlier to help Matty Cash out, because it felt like every Newcastle attack was coming down that left hand side, and you kind of you'd hope and expect that McGinn would offer a little bit more defensive nous maybe than Bailey.
Well, for in my opinion, McGinn should start on that right hand side. If you're playing a box midfield, McGinn should start on the right hand side of that every week anyway, because he's so effective there. And he can get forward, he can get into good positions. And like you say, he supports the right back. I just don't, you know, I don't know, it just felt like they obviously had to move things around a little bit at the last minute. I'm sure if Buendia had been fit, you know, he starts on the left, like you said, and McGinn starts in that position where he was so effective last season. Particularly against Newcastle at home, he was brilliant, wasn't he? So I think, yeah, it's one of them, isn't it? They've obviously had to tinker with things a little bit with the Buendia injury, and it's perhaps not worked as well as they'd hoped. But it was it was just a really slow, sloppy start by Villa in the first few minutes. Newcastle really looked up to get on the front foot, and they were kind of causing Villa problems from the off, really. And Tonali scored the opening goal after 5 minutes. But Villa rallied, you know, somewhat, and it was only a few minutes later that, cross into the box by Luca Dean was flicked on by Watkins, and a really confident finish on the half volley by Moussa Diaby on his debut. It was a perfect response, Dan, after a really turbulent start, and it felt like we kind of levelled and we might go again here.
Yeah, I mean, I actually, and James and I were talking about this before we started recording, I actually think Villa played quite well in this match, which feels bizarre when we got spanked 5-1. And particularly in these open exchanges, we went a goal down early and responded, as you say, Andy, really well. And if there's one huge positive we can take out of this match, it's probably Diaby. I thought it was a lovely finish. Wrong foot, isn't it? Right-footed. Seemed like it got a couple of deflections coming through as well. And it's one of those ones that's really easy. Well, I say, talking as a centre-back who can barely kick the ball, really easy to shin the ball over the bar when it comes at you like that. But he controlled it really nicely, placed it rather than levered it in. And I thought it's a lovely finish. And there's definitely cause for hope there. Like if we can respond against a good team like Newcastle like that, then it gives me hope that maybe we can respond further on into the season. But genuinely, at 1-1, I felt like we were going to go on and win it. I know it was only 11 minutes in and I still have my claret-tinted glasses on, but I honestly thought we were going to go on and win it. I'm madman looking back at it now, though.
Yeah, it was certainly a good response, wasn't it? I think it was disappointing. It's always disappointing to concede an early goal like that. And I think we all knew it was going to be a tough game at Newcastle. But I think we also probably all knew it was going to be a high-scoring affair. You look at the sort of the games between the two clubs, the last sort of 12 months have all sort of featured, I think, about 4, 5, 6 goals. So it was probably never going to be a 0-0 this one. And I think that was the cause for optimism when Diaby did manage to score, that we'd managed to sort of hit back so quickly. It was very much game on at that point, I think.
Yeah, what did over the whole game, what did you make of Moussa Diaby's general performance? And were there bits there that kind of excited you early doors in his Premier League career?
I think he offered us another outlet. I think it was a game where Watkins was quiet. And normally when you have a game when Watkins is quiet, Villa don't score. And he at least offered us another threat going forwards. The one worry I had is we looked for him a bit too early. I don't know what you reckon, James, but it felt like we were trying to get in behind him at every opportunity, whereas occasionally a bit more build-up might have been kind of the doctor's orders.
Yeah, but I think when you've got someone like Diaby who just possesses so much pace, I think it's always a good outlet, isn't it? And for me, I thought he was probably our best player on Saturday, to be honest. He was a sort of a constant threat, really. And I think I can really see the fans sort of falling in love with this guy, because you get the ball and you're never quite sure what he's going to do. In a good way. I mean, you could say that about some of the other Villa players, and that's not always a compliment, is it? But I think with Diaby, it's something we're all going to come and love, really. I think he's the pace is just electric. He looks like he's got a good eye for goal. There was a chance he created for Watkins, wasn't there, in the first half, which I thought showed superb composure, where he looked like he was shaping to hit it, and then he just sort of slid the ball in between the two defenders into Watkins, who unfortunately sort of didn't really get enough on it to threaten the goalie. But yeah, I really liked what I saw from Diaby, and he was definitely a sort of a positive in an otherwise sort of, yeah, a disappointing afternoon.
Yeah, it was. It's looking for those little glimmers, isn't it, in a game like this, and you know, a scoreline like this. And I think if you can look at your big new signing, and he's got off the mark, scored a really good goal, and has looked threatening on his first game, you know, in that sort of level of adversity as well. I think that is a really good sign. So, you know, hopefully that'll stand him in good stead, and that experience. I mean, none of them will want to experience this again, will they? What they experienced on Saturday. So, you know, let's hope, you know, that's the case. But obviously, Villa, you know, were in the game for a while, but then, as Newcastle so often do at home, well, anywhere really, I don't think it's unusual for Newcastle to score this amount of goals, to be fair. But Isak put them ahead. Question marks for offside. What did you think? Offside, potentially, this one?
James is nodding. I reckon, James, I do listen to our kind of...
I watched that over and over again, and I can't for the life of me understand how that was given. When the free kick was first knocked in, he had two, if not three, players who were all involved in the goal in an offside position. Isak was yards offside. Now, I know he wasn't interfering in that first phase of play, but he was interfering with the second phase of play. I mean, and surely that was as a direct consequence of him being stood so far offside during the first phase. Okay, Botman, I think, was probably borderline, and I do understand, I think, the referees have, I think, the VAR, the offside, again, is changing, I think, a little this year to try and give the benefit of the doubt a bit more to the attacking player. But Dan Burn, he was offside, and I kept watching it back. He had his arms around Cash. Cash was the only defender of ours over on that side of the box and was impeded in getting the ball and challenging Botman for the ball, because Dan Burn, who was offside, had his arms around him. And I say I watched that two, three times over, and I could not for the life of me understand how that was given.
You've voiced that better than me, James. So I'm similar. Like, I know we're old men shouting at clouds here. The offside rule has moved on, but do you remember when offside was offside? Wasn't life simpler then? I don't know how, as a defender, you're meant to line up for set pieces, because you know there's two or three guys offside, but do you either drop your defensive line 10 yards to mark them and then they drop another 10 yards, or do you just hope that they don't get it in the second phase of play? I just don't understand, as a defender, how you're meant to defend those situations. I mean, of course, if it was at the other end, I'd be saying the offside rule's brilliant and this is why they brought it in, but it just feels cruel at this point.
In fairness, I saw us try to do exactly the same team, same thing when we had free kicks. I think it's to cause confusion, I think, isn't it? As you say, the defenders don't really know who they're supposed to be picking up. I think that's probably why teams are doing it, isn't it? And as I say, I mean, yes, I watched us when we had some attacking free kicks later on in the game, and we were doing exactly the same thing, having two or three players stood sort of a yard or so offside when the ball was first knocked in. So, yeah, I guess maybe, I don't know if you can complain too much, and would we be complaining if it was the other way around and Villa had scored? I mean, probably not. That's just the way it is, isn't it? But But yeah, I did feel a little bit aggrieved about that one.
Yeah, but we are complaining.
Yeah.
Let's say what it is.
This is why we have a podcast, so we can complain. What's the point otherwise?
Yeah. But I mean, obviously Villa went behind and you know, the main incident that we're going to kind of focus on from the first half was the injury to Tyrone Mings. Just kind of innocuous, really, chasing back, and he's gone awkwardly, and his knee's obviously buckled, and he seemed to know straight away that it was a bad one. He was in a lot of pain and obviously quite upset. It appears to be a knee ligament injury, and we've had it confirmed, you know, today that he's going to be out for a significant period of time, which is obviously a massive blow. And again, you know, as with Emmy, you know, we send Tyrone all the best wishes and hope that he can get back quickly and makes a full recovery whenever that is. But we're going to miss him, aren't we? And you know, Villa. We obviously have a lot of important players these days. We're not a one-man team like we have been in the past. But, Dan, there's an argument, and I know you wrote a piece about this as it relates to Mings and Buendia, but there's an argument, you know, that losing Mings is probably the worst injury that we could have had.
Yeah, it's ironic, isn't it? We're blessed with four centre-backs, yet the one who's irreplaceable gets injured. It's... It feels cruel, and it feels particularly cruel because he's a player who's been on this redemption arc where he kind of came back, was our most important player towards the end of our season, and you felt was maybe on the trajectory to the England team this summer, and to have it snatched away from him like that, it's honestly, I think, one of the worst, if not the worst, experience I've had as a Villa fan. It's not like the relegation, which you saw come in, or Dino leaving, which you saw come in, or Grealish leaving. It was just an innocuous moment in a match that disrupts our entire season. And yeah, Andy, as you said, I wrote a piece about it for the site because Mings is so central to how we play, and the stats are alarming. I think in 12 Premier League games where Tyrone Mings hasn't played for us, we've won one game. And that's a really, really worrying state of affairs when we're now going into 37 more without him. So I think the problem for me is I don't think anyone in the team can do what Mings does. No one is as physical as Tyrone Mings, and no one is as much of a leader as Tyrone Mings either. He's the guy who's the heartbeat of this team, right? He's the lovable guy. He's the guy who cracks heads together. He puffs his chest out when we're up against it. And that's all gone. And so who's doing that in Ballymore Heath today? Who's doing that against Everton next week? And I mean, we've got Diego Carlos, who, to coin a joke from our WhatsApp chat, is the Schrodinger centre back. We don't know if he's great. We don't know if he's terrible yet. And now all of a sudden we're going to be relying on him perhaps for the season ahead. As we were saying earlier, if only we could rewind back to the start of the season, I'd happily the first 30 minutes in Newcastle, I'd happily have again. That's just after Tyrone's injury, I want to stop life there and go back again. Let's control or delete life and just go back to pre-Tyrone's injury.
Yeah, I think to use the Football Manager analogy, I think you'd have rebooted the season at this point, wouldn't you? try and have a go. But no, I mean, I echo everything you said there, Dan, really. I think he's a pivotal player for Villa. And yes, we've got other centre-backs, but do any of those bring the qualities that Mings had in terms of the leadership and those sort of soft skills, let's say, rather than the sort of the defensive abilities? Obviously, he was ever improving under Emery, and I think he had a real strong chance of going to the Euros next summer. He'd been in the squad, hadn't he, for the last round of qualifiers. He was certainly moving in the right sort of direction, seemed to be back in favour with Southgate, and yeah, I think he had every chance of going to the Euros if he sort of maintained that sort of progress with his form. But yeah, I think it's It's his sort of his leadership and his communication, I think, is where we're going to really, really miss him. He was felt to me like the guy who was the glue and sort of marshalled the defence. I think you've already pointed to the stats of our results with and without Mings. And I think that's down to, how he marshals the defence. Konsa looks a much, much stronger player when he's playing alongside him. You look at Torres and Diego Carlos, and I'm not sure either of those players sort of are going to do that. Now, you don't know. Maybe Konsa will step up and maybe he'll do that. I don't know, but we'll have to wait and see. But yes, I mean, Carlos, I think, is almost like a new signing, but I mean, I think that was only his third Premier League appearance for us on Saturday. So it's if we're asking him to come in and be this sort of world-beating centre half who we signed, in fairness, but I think after his own sort of injury troubles last season, I think that is putting a lot on him. And we don't really know what player we've got there and how badly he'll have been affected by his own injuries. I put in the chat earlier sort of shades of Larsson, really. He's potentially, in 2 to 3 years' time, I think we could be talking about Carlos in the terms of we sort of revere Martin Larsson. Or his career may have completely fizzled out. I've never really got going again after the injury, and time will tell on that one.
Yeah, I think there's obviously cause to be extremely downhearted about losing Mings, but I think I don't necessarily share the kind of negativity, or not negativity really, the scepticism perhaps around the other players. I think, you know, Pau Torres has essentially been signed, you know, to be potentially to be Mings's long term replacement anyway, playing on that left side of the defence. And I think we do have, I mean, Ezri Konsa has, you know, been through the mill. He's incredibly experienced defender now, Premier League defender. And of course, we do have Carlos, and okay, the jury's out, particularly regarding the injuries. But I think, you know, that all three of them are good players. We have Callum Chambers, of course, as well, who's, you know, very experienced centre back. So I think it's because for me, when you replace a player that's so influential, it's about changing, isn't it? It's about developing and evolving, rather than just taking one player out and putting one player in. It's about kind of how we alter things and how we would have played to obviously Mings's strengths. We'd have used all his best qualities to our advantage previously. Now we have to do that with the other players. And I mean, you know, for me, I was thinking about it. Obviously, Ezri Konsa is well, you know, he's done exceptionally well since Emery came in that system. Pau Torres, as we know how successful he's been under Emery in the past. And Diego Carlos, although he's not been playing, for the last few months he's been training with the team. He knows what to do. He's drilled in the system and what needs to happen. So, you know, it's about how we perhaps like move things away from the Mings situation and into a kind of new normal for that defence, really. I think there's going to be a rocky time, though. I really do. I think undoubtedly Mings was a massive part of how that defence evolved in the second half of last season. And it's not going to be easy to just uproot him out the side and for everything to be great. There are going to be difficulties there, but I'm convinced. I mean, it makes me really pleased that we already signed Pau Torres, that we've got him on board already, and we're not now in a position where we're looking at Konsa and Carlos and Chambers and thinking, my God, we need to go and sign another quality centre back. If we don't sign another centre back, I think we're okay, although it might just take a bit of time to adjust.
get on the blower to Jan Bednarak. We could fill up those squad numbers. I get completely where you're coming from, Andy. I think, thank God, we signed Pau Torres, who is a world-class centre-back who's left-footed, which is exactly what we need right now. What worries me is I think Pau Torres is very similar to Ezri Konsa. They're both more elegant defenders, shall we say. They're both the kind of guy who'd hold the door open for you when you kind of walk into the shops rather than slamming it in your face. And I don't know why I'm saying that, because I'm sure Tyrone Mings holds the door open for people. He's a lovely guy. But he's on the football pitch, he's a lot nastier. And we lack that as a team. We lack that physicality. We lack that. We lack leadership, actually. I really do think we do. And suddenly, I think we saw that against Newcastle. We collapsed. We capitulated like that we've not seen us do under Emery. And I think that was the absence of Mings. And I do think having a... it sounds so old-fashioned to say, but a proper leader of a centre-back, a proper shouty, pointy centre-back makes such a difference when you play in a high line. It's why Liverpool spanked loads of money on Virgil van Dijk. It's why Man City did it with Diaz and kind of all that. I just think it's so important when you're playing that high line. And I guess the question that I'm roundaboutly getting to you both is, do you think there'll be a change in style now without Mings? Will we drop a bit, or will we still be suicidal high line?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I mean, I think Emery's shown time and time again that this is Emery ball, isn't it? That the high line is a function of that. That's how he wants the team to be set up. And I don't really think, if I'm honest, a massive departure from that now, just because we've lost sort of one player. But as you say, I think Mings was integral to how that worked. I think he was the leader in the back four, the guy who was sort of calling the shots in terms of sort of pushing out or sort of sitting. And it's now who's going to sort of fill those boots, really. As I say, I don't think Torres and Konsa, neither of them particularly strike me as the vocal sort of leader, sort of shouting out commands. And it's whether perhaps maybe Carlos is maybe the one I'd maybe look to. Be interested to see. I mean, I'm sure we'll come on to the Everton preview. And I suppose maybe the silver lining is maybe of all the teams to be playing in your next game when you've suffered such a catastrophic sort of injury and having to look at how you set your defence up, Everton at home is probably one of the games you'd maybe sort of plump for.
Yeah, well, this is it. And I think it's home game as well. I think I think the circumstances of the Newcastle game, I mean, you know, obviously Pau Torres came on and replaced Mings. We went on to get battered 5-1. We don't need to talk too much about that. And I think that was, in people's minds, that looks bad, doesn't it? When you see Pau Torres chasing the ball into the net, you know, it's on his debut. It's not a good look, is it? But at the same time, I think I'd like to think that this time next week after the Everton game, we'll have an entirely different perspective on Pau Torres. You know, he is a quality player, and you know, several huge clubs were trying to sign this guy. You know, they're not just trying to sign him because he's a bit of a wallflower. You know, he's a bit, you know, he's clearly a top player, isn't he? And he's an international player as well. Not everyone has that character, do they? To be able to kind of lead in that way. But you know, maybe he's a leader of a different sort, and that's fine as well, isn't it? It's about executing the game plan. It's about doing the things that you're meant to do and using your abilities. To me, that's the most important thing. So let's see. Let's see. You know, I guess he'll start on Saturday. I'm excited to see him play. And I'm hoping at the end of the game, I'm happy that he's at the club. So we'll see with that. But just kind of, I mean, we don't have to, I'm not going to go through all the Newcastle goals.
We don't have time.
No, Isaac Wilson and Barnes scored, you know, that was it really. And they took advantage of, I think Villa, you know, perhaps suffering a bit in the aftermath of the Mings injury, and you know, they kind of ran all over us really in that second half. 5-1, there we go, bottom of the league, but the only way is up.
This feels oddly, as Yaz said, oddly familiar to last year's podcast around this time. We started really enthusiastically. We lost. We were playing Everton next week. It's all doom and gloom. Nothing changes as a Villa fan, does it?
Yeah, I remember last season's podcast. I think we were on the brink of calling for the manager to be sacked, weren't we?
It's true.
so, and we probably weren't wrong in hindsight, but no one's doing that this year. I think there's still cause to be optimistic. It's always chastening, isn't it, to have this kind of defeat. Worse defeat than last year, really, in many ways. But at least there are positives to be had. But we'll move on to... I just have a quick discussion about the transfer window, because there is news coming out this evening that Villa have agreed a deal with Galatasaray to sign Nicola Zaniolo, the Italian midfielder. I think he's only been there since January, hasn't he? Having left Roma, we think it's a loan deal with an option or an obligation to buy, but I'm not certain which one. I think there's reports of both, and he clearly is potentially a kind of replacement for Buendia, I would suggest. Kind of a fairly versatile midfielder, had a big reputation as a youngster, I understand as well. So but himself has had a couple of bad injuries, and that's kind of set his career back somewhat. So, you know, we'll wait and see what happens with that. Might get announced, might not before this pod is released. So we'll wait and see. But obviously, there's some work to do now, isn't there? And whether they try and you know, replace Tyrone Mings or whether they go with the players they've got. But what do you think, Dan? Where do we need to strengthen? Would you try and replace Mings, or do you think we need to focus on maybe the areas we were looking at anyway?
It's a tough one, because I don't know if you can replace Mings, certainly not on the cheap, and certainly not when Jan Bednarek's not available, Andy. We just can't do it. But no, in all seriousness...
I'm sure he could be made available.
we could tempt him back. No, in all seriousness, I don't think you can replace Mings. I think maybe you can replace his off-the-field qualities, and it wouldn't surprise me to get in... We got in an experienced head, a little bit of a dressing room cheerleader that comes in and bring those qualities. But I think we'll still be shopping in the same markets we were beforehand, which is a replacement for Buendia, which Zaniolo's a really good buy for that. He's exactly the kind of player you go out and get when your starting player's been injured. You know, he's a bit of a flyer. He's had a couple of ACLs, a lot of off-the-field problems. We're getting him on loan, but he might be gold. We're essentially panning for gold. He's squad filler, and if he comes good, brilliant. We found a nugget or two in there. But if not, we just throw him back in the river with the rest of the footballing detritus. But outside of that, I think we're probably still looking at a striker. If the last 48 hours have told us anything, it's that ACLs are liable to snap in the league at any moment. And, I mean, it's bad enough that Buendia and Mings have gone. Imagine if Ollie Watkins went. I mean, we'd be in real trouble there. So I'd still expect us and like us to get a striker. But who knows at this point? I think the injuries is one of those things that might galvanise Monchi and Emery into action to go out and splash more cash than they were planning to, because a deep squad suddenly looks flimsy again.
Yeah, I think it does, doesn't it? Unfortunately, with these injuries, after sort of probably thinking that they've probably done enough to address it, yes, I think the one of the obvious weaknesses, I think, at the moment is probably backup to Watkins. Big fan of Archer, but if heaven forbid we're talking next week that Watkins has done his ACL and he's out for the season, and that's a lot to put on Archer and Duran to carry the team. And Duran himself, I think, is out injured still, isn't he? So it's a lot to ask of those two to lead the line. I mean, I know Diaby hopefully is going to chip in up front with a few goals and obviously has started well. But yeah, I think that's certainly a position where we could probably look to strengthen. I mean, I don't know if is Danny Ings available or bring him back in. But yeah, and I know I've seen a few people talking about possibly right back again, maybe an upgrade there, possibly, which I don't think is probably it's probably something we could be looking at, I think. But I think what the management have sort of it looks to me though is that there's not sort of that sort of scattergun approach now. I think all the signings we seem to be making at the moment seem to be much, much more considered. And I think unless the right player is available at the right sort of for the right value, then I don't think the club go there, which I think is perhaps something different to maybe where we were sort of previously.
Yeah, I had a little thought earlier about the defensive aspect and wondered whether that's a position that Kamara could even cover. And if you went back in for someone like Guendouzi to kind of hold the midfield, maybe that's an option, or at least a rotational kind of option, something that you've got then. And Guendouzi can cover more or less every position in the midfield himself, can't he? One of Emery's men as well. So not, you know, somewhat played in the Premier League before, you know, it's kind of low risk really. That might be something. But we'll just have to say, I agree on the striker though. I was very confident, I think, before pre-season started, that Watkins with Archer and Duran sort of backing him up would be enough. But like you say, you're not going to rotate Watkins, so he is going to be heavily loaded, isn't he? And then that's when injuries happen. And even though, you know, as robust as he is, you know, it makes it more likely, doesn't it? That even if he's out for 2 or 3 weeks, you know, it's a big thing, isn't it? So, I wonder about a striker, maybe an older head that can come in and play in games, but maybe from the bench and offer a bit of a rotational option for us up front. But yeah, I'm intrigued about Zaniolo, like you say, and you know, not a name that I'd necessarily thought of, but you know, certainly someone that has potential and always has had. So you know, we'll wait and see on that one. The interesting one, just to mention quickly, is Craig has been kind of, since Buendia got injured, he's been on our group, kind of calling for the cancellation of the Aaron Ramsey deal to Burnley, and that hasn't gone through yet, has it? I mean, I wonder if they're just holding off on that a little bit as well.
Makes sense. I mean, if until we actually get a body over the line, you don't want to ship one out, do you? Even if you're delaying them for a week or two, just to make sure you don't leave yourself short. I don't know. I've not watched much of Aaron Ramsey, but it's the position he plays in, right? Left wing seems to be his role. So
yeah, he's an attacking midfielder essentially. Yeah. I think. Yeah, yeah. So it's
I still imagine it will go through, but you'd imagine we don't say yes to that email. We don't reply to it until Zaniolo's through the door, just in case.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe that, and that would make good sense, wouldn't it? Really. But yeah, Everton at home this weekend. Get the home season kicked off on Sunday afternoon. Seems an annual event, doesn't it, that Villa face Everton at home to get their season started, kick-started. I seem to remember the first season in the Premier League was Everton at home was our first win of the season, wasn't it? And certainly last season as well, after that awful Bournemouth game. So that, you know, they've been very reliable in that sense for us over recent seasons. They were, I think, somewhat unfortunate to lose their opening game 1-0 to Fulham. Had some good chances in that game, and obviously they missed Dominic Calvert-Lewin when he's not available. Not sure what his situation is for Sunday, but they've definitely kind of. It feels more stable outfit under Sean Dyche, certainly harder to beat. possibly a different, you know, different proposition than last season. Villa have obviously got an excellent record home and away against Everton over recent years since coming back up to the Premier League, and be looking to keep that going. Pau Torres, as we discussed, and Diego Carlos will come into the reckoning to replace Tyrone Mings, and Bailey may be a doubt if that back injury is still causing him a problem from Newcastle. Dan, this feels like a huge match already, doesn't it? It's kind of vital that Villa bounce back now to avoid a bit of a mini crisis, do you think?
Yeah, big game. Big game. Thank God it's at Villa Park, though, because I think that's exactly what the boys need, is the fans behind them. But as you say, Everton have been pretty good to us over the years, which always makes me feel good, because it's the team my father-in-law supports. So I've always had bragging rights over it. But I'm a little bit nervous about the weekend, as we say, just because of the disruption at the back. And fortunately, you know, the only threat to Villa will be Neil Mope, which is, you know, about as much of a threat as Andy on the right wing, I think we've worked out. So it's a good time to be facing Everton. I'm going to be really intrigued to see what happens on the team sheet. As you say, I think I'd be surprised if Leon Bailey starts. I quite imagine Philogene will be coming in for him. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Konsa shifted out to right back and Carlos slotted in, and we have that kind of pseudo back three again, because Konsa didn't cover himself in glory either at the weekend. And I think that might be ultimately where Emery goes to change things up. But are both of you going to be at the game? I know you will be, Andy. Are you going, James?
Yeah, no, I've got a ticket for this one. I'm having to, unfortunately, not take the seat next to Andy, though, due to the... I think it's something to do with this new terrace up in the Upper Holt. So I'm only, unfortunately, don't have a season ticket. So I'm still on the waiting list. So I've got the membership, but yeah, for some reason, not able to buy tickets in the Upper Holt. So to make some new friends in the Lower Holt, which I'm sure it won't be too hard.
Yeah, so I mean, how do you think we approach this one, James? Do you think, you know, like we say, the defensive thing will need a bit of a reshuffle. Potentially, we might have the new signing in if that is true and that's happening. How would you line up?
Yeah, I think the defence will be probably the biggest intrigue. And I think that was, yeah, sort of didn't really mention before, but that again, that was another slight surprise with the lineup we went for at Newcastle. Because I think what Emery had obviously been tinkering with quite a lot during pre-season was this sort of three centre-backs, with either Torres filling in at the sort of left-sided, sort of almost a left-back, isn't it, or Konsa on the right doing the same. So to line up with the two conventional centre-backs and then sort of Dean and Cash in the full-back positions was perhaps a slight surprise, sort of seemed to go away from what we'd been rehearsing in pre-season. So yeah, perhaps especially now with the necessary shake-up we're going to need, perhaps we will see either Torres sort of filling in on the left or Konsa filling in on the right with perhaps Carlos coming in. I don't think we'll see Bailey. I'm not quite sure how bad his back injury is, but yeah, you'd think perhaps it's a good opportunity for Philogene to come in. And I think, yeah, it will be a big game, but I think I'm sure the crowd will sort of get behind. And we all know Emery likes to sort of try and start the game sort of fast and really get at the opponents. And I think Everton will be there for the taking. I think if you can go out, hit Everton early, I think they're going to be short on confidence. Obviously, they narrowly avoided relegation last season. Yes, they probably outplayed Fulham for the vast majority of the game last week, but ultimately lost. So their confidence is going to be questionable. Yeah, I'm not quite sure. I think Calvert-Lewin is close to a return, but I think there's certainly a question mark there. And I think if he's not playing, then you do have to look at where Everton's goals are going to come from. Yeah, I think it could go one of two ways, isn't it? I think this weekend, I think if we sort of come out, hit Everton early, then they're going to be there for the taking. And if we win sort of by a couple of goals, then it's sort of business as usual, isn't it? Next week, it's sort of onwards and upwards. But yeah, if we do toil a bit, maybe Everton do sort of grab a scrappy goal or something. Neil Maupay bound to score against us, isn't he? He normally does. And then, yeah, if you've then two losses in the first two games, then it's going to put a very different complexion on the season, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. So, okay, so what do we think then in terms of predictions, Dan? Do you have a prediction for this one?
2-1 Villa.
2-1 Villa. James?
I'm going 3-1.
3-1. Okay, not
3-1. I think.
Yeah, you've not left me much there. Do you know what? Let's be optimistic. Let's say we're going to claw back the goal difference and go 4-0. How's that? That would be lovely.
I think so. I mean, we'd look dangerous, didn't we, going forward in pre-season? And I think let's not underestimate how good Newcastle are. I think we came up a very good side on Saturday, and I think they are going to finish high at the table. So, yeah, it's not all doom and gloom. And as I think Everton are there for the taking. I think if you can get up them early, get an early goal or two, then I think their confidence is just going to dissipate.
Yeah, well, let's hope so. And you know, we'll obviously be watching with interest and seeing what happens with the team, and you never know, a new signing might be around by then as well. So let's see. But thanks for joining me today, guys. You know, great to go through some of that stuff, and a bit of a therapy session again, isn't it? For this one, I don't think we've quite had such a bad week. Yeah, thanks to everyone for listening as well. Hope you're still enjoying the podcast. Look out for the new one, as we say, which will be starting up in line with the European games coming up in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And check out the website underagaslitlamp.com. We have started again to put some really good sort of articles on there. There's some great stuff. I know Dan's had another one on this week as well. I think yesterday. On Sunday, yours was published, Dan. Excellent read and well worth a look. So head over there and check that out. Give us a follow on all the socials, including Threads, where I am. I share everything on Threads. Yeah, all the best. And if you are going to the game, you know, let's hope we can get this season kick-started and move on from last week. But until next week, stay safe and up the Villa.